Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. This morning's text number 2, translation. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet." Srila Prabhupada's purport. Materialistic life means attachment to the body and everything in relationship to the body. This attachment is based on lusty desires for sense gratification, especially specifically sexual enjoyment. Kamas taistaya hita jnana. When one is too attached to material enjoyment, he is bereft of all knowledge. Hita jnana. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, those who are attached to material enjoyment are mostly inclined to worship the demigods, to procure various material opulences. They are especially attracted to worship of the goddess Durga and Lord Shiva, because this transcendental couple can offer their devotees all material opulence. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was detached from all material enjoyment. He therefore took shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nrisimhadeva and not the feet of any demigod. It is to be understood that if one really wants release from this material world, from the threefold miseries, and from janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age, and disease, one must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For without the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot get release from materialistic life. Atheistic men are very much attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, if they get some opportunity to achieve more and more material enjoyment, they take it. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was very careful in this regard. Although born of a materialistic father, because he was a devotee, he had no material desires. Anya vilashika shunyam. So the text again. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet." So Krishna consciousness is for those who want release from material life. It is not for those who want material enjoyment. For material enjoyment, there are many arrangements already present. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is not meant for those who want material life. Srimad Bhagavatam is not meant for those who want material life. But as usual, we find out that people, while offering respect for Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, are not really interested in following. Just as, for example, people who come from India, they want to know, why are we only worshipping Krishna? Why are we not worshipping Durga, Shiva, Ganesh, and so on? What can we say? Krishna says he has judgment about people who worship these devatas. I was at a meeting a little while ago with some people from Vishwa Hindu Parishad, a Hindu organization. They like us very much, actually, but some things we do in ISKCON irritate them. One of them is we use this word, demigod. They feel it's belittling. So we explain, no, we don't mean to belittle. To use demigod to translate deva or devata. But they're thinking that we should really say, of course, because they have some philosophy that all these should be equal to Krishna. Well, they seem to think this is Hinduism. That you should be able to worship all these gods. What can we say except to say that Lord Sri Krishna is not a Hindu? Because it's not our business, and of course we're not being critical of devatas. Krishna's never critical of them, but he is critical of those who worship them. What can we say? You know, here it is. Prabhupada quotes, kamas tastaya vrittajnana. Because of kama, desire for sense gratification, lustic desires, vrittajnana, they are deprived of knowledge. So what do those people who are, because their minds are distorted by kama, by lust, and are deprived of knowledge, he says, prapandyante anya devata. They bow down before other gods. Tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyataswaya. And they follow rules and regulations for worshipping them according to their position. This Krishna said. So he has this judgment, this kamas tastaya, with the jnana. What can you say? The Krishna said it. So, and then of course in this chapter, same place, he goes on to explain. He brings this up to explain that those people who have this desire for worshipping Anya Devata, these other gods, Krishna gives them facility. He says, I'm sitting in their heart and I make their faith strong, and allow that devata to bestow the benefits. So he's making the faith strong. He's the actual bestower of the benefits. And then he says, antavattu palantesham tadbhavati alpamedasam. Again, a critical word, alpamedasam, describing these people or worshipping devatas. He uses this expression, alpamedasam, meager intelligence. They have meager intelligence. Why? He explains why it's meager, because the phalam, the result they attain, antava, it possesses an end. It comes to an end. Their fruits are temporary and limited. So devam deva yajo janti, those who worship those devatas, they will go to those devas. Mad bhaktya yanti mama, those who worship me will come to me. This is Krishna's assessment. So he says about people that are worshipping Anya Devatas because of their material desires. He uses the Hrita Jnana openly to some these words. So we have to represent Krishna, that's our business. So we have to say what Krishna says. We want to rescue people. Krishna wants to rescue people from this material world. And in Bhagavad Gita, it's such a nice book, you know, it's so short, it's so easy. I mean, if you take a Sanskrit course, in your first year, you'll read verses from Bhagavad Gita because it's so easy. You want to study Vedanta, everyone will have a hard time of it. And almost everyone who is now studying Vedanta is incompetent anyway. They don't come up to the actual standards. But Bhagavad Gita is so accessible. And yet still people don't understand. Bhagavad Gita is spoken at the beginning of this Kali Yuga for people who are not able to understand all the Vedic literature. It's such a vast literature. And so many things are going on. So many practices are being performed. The Vedic literature is compared to a kalpa vriksha, a tree from where you can get any fruit you want. So what are we to know? What should be the best thing? There are so many people. From the Vedas, there are so many different paths. Now, what are we to know? What is the siddhanta? What is the end? What is the ultimate point of all this Vedic literature? So Krishna comes and in 500 verses he explains it very nicely. So here he takes one practice that is engaged in by the followers of the Vedas, this worship of the devatas, and he says about this practice, it is but done by those who have meager intelligence and whose minds are distorted by material desires, and therefore they become deprived of knowledge. What's wrong with it? They only achieve limited and temporary things. And they're going to them for benedictions without knowing from whom the benedictions actually come. They're going to the demigods, but the demigods are merely middlemen. And the actual benefit is given by Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna. Mm-hmm. And then Krishna goes on, actually, in the same chapter, seventh chapter, having discussed worship of the devatas, he now discusses something else. Avyaktam vyaktam apanam manyante mam abuddhaya. Another group of people is called abuddhaya. Again, this word is used. Abuddhaya means people who have no buddhi, no intelligence, no discrimination. And what does he say about those people? Manyante mam, they think about me. Avyaktam vyaktam apanam. They think that first I was formless or impersonal, avyaktam, and apanam achieved vyaktam, manifest form and personality. And so here's a philosophy that we have also heard. That in somehow in its original position, the absolute truth, the source of everything, is avyaktam, without name, without form, without qualities, without activities. That's what's meant by avyaktam. And that later on, It assumes or becomes, due to contact and illusion, manifest as vyaktam, personality. If you think that of me, that first I was impersonal and then became personal, Krishna says, abhudaya. Not intelligent. This is very simple. Avyaktam vyaktam apanam manyante mam abhudaya. Easy to understand. Very clear. But still, people look. Then we go on later on. We'll go on further. Ninth chapter, Krishna comes back around again. And again discusses different Vedic practices. Praividya mam somapa putapapa. Those who are performing sacrifices. The karma kanda sacrifices. Not puja to the demigods, but the sacrificial performances, the karma mamamsa school, they study the Vedas, they drink the soma juice, they seek the heavenly planets. So it is another practice. And Krishna says, purified of sinful reactions, they take birth from the pious heavenly planets of Indra, where they enjoy Deva Bhogan, godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this Marchaloka again. Now, this mortal planet. They come back to here. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment, kama kama, he describes them as this way, the same word, kama, kama kama, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas, trayi, achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. Ye api anya devata bhakta, they just goes back to those. Yajante sadayandita tepibam evikantaya yajanti adhiti purvakam. Those who worship Anya Devata, same group, other devatas, bhakta, he says they are actually worshipping me. And then people say, so, see, so it doesn't make any difference. But then Krishna says, but their worship is adhiti purvakam. Avidipurvakam means it's wrong way. But it doesn't approve. And then he says that he is actually the enjoyer of all sacrifices and the receiver of all worshippers. And those who do not recognize this, he says, they fall down. They fall down again into the material world. Yanti deva vata deva, those who worship the devatas, they attain the devatas. It's not the case that it doesn't matter who you worship, you all go to the same place. How many times we've heard that preached, sometimes in the name of Hinduism, it doesn't matter who you worship. It's not the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, if you worship the devatas, you go to the devatas. If you worship the Pitri, forefathers, ancestors, that's where you go. Bhutani yanti bhuteja, if you worship the Bhutas, ghosts, you go to the ghosts. Yantimas jajinopima, but those who worship me, come to me. This is what Krishna says. This is what Bhagavad Gita says. There's no doubt about it, this is what Bhagavad Gita says. So why is such a, why does Krishna tell us these things? What is his purpose? Because he wants to establish, the whole Bhagavad Gita is about dharma. What should I be doing? What am I supposed to do? It starts out by Arjuna asking a question about his position on the battle of Kurukshetra, and it expands. And so Krishna, in the course of answering this question, surveys all the Vedic literature, something we can't do. Looks at all the different philosophies, and here you see, makes a judgment about each of them. And therefore, he can conclude, Vedaischa sarva aham eva vejo. He says, all the Vedas are just searching after me. He shows that all these different processes, whether of sacrifice, or worship of the devatas, or yoga, or various other kinds of renunciation of work, austerities, penances, sacrifices of various kinds, everything that's taught in the Vedas, acquirement of knowledge, all these different processes are different ways of coming to him. Vedaischa sarva aham eva vejo. All the different Vedas, they really aim at me. And then he makes Arjuna an offer. Sarva dharman purijaja mame kam saranam raja. I'm going to let you come directly to me. You can give up all these other dharmas. You don't have to worry about them. And now you can come to me directly for shelter and exclusively. Do you think you'll have some problems giving up these different dharmas? Don't worry about it. Aham tvam sarva pape vyo mukti vishami. I shall deliver you from the reaction of all sinful activities. Masuchaha. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. You'll have no problems. So this is the way Krishna nicely explains Bhagavad Gita. Because the business of coming to him is the business of, at the same time, getting free from birth, death, old age, and disease in this material world. That, first of all, should be our business. Any process, whether it's under the name of religion or is not in the name of religion, that is increasing our material desires and our attachments to material things, is bad for us. Because no matter how much there may be in this material world, deva bhogan, there may be heavenly enjoyment, but it's temporary. Adi antavat. That's what Krishna says about any pleasure in this material world. It possesses a beginning and an end. And because it possesses a beginning and an end, those who are Buddha, those who are wise, they take no delight in them. He says, these pleasures that are born out of the contact between the senses and their objects, samsparsaja bhogan, these bhogan, they may be deva bhogan or they may be not so deva, but they may be asura bhogan. That's more likely that they're demoniac. But whatever they are, any kind of bhogan, enjoyment, samsparsaja, that is, arises from the contact between the senses and the objects. Yehi samsparsaja bhogan, dukkha yunaya evate. It is indeed the cause of all suffering. This is a clear statement by Krishna. He says, eva, this is emphatic, dukkha yunaya. It is the source of all suffering. This is why the material world is called the world of illusion. Because although these bhoga, these pleasures of from the senses are the source of all suffering. Everybody runs to them as though they are the source of happiness. They have an attractive feature. So therefore, sense pleasures are considered to be attractive in the way that a ruby mounted in the head of a cobra is attractive. It may be very beautiful, but look where it is. Look what happens if you try to grab it. You die. And that's the trouble with these material pleasures. They are not good for us. They have a beginning and an end. They're part of the world of birth and death, and if we participate in the enjoyments offered by the world of birth and death, we are also caught up in that world of birth and death. So the price that we have to pay for enjoyment in this world is death. Prabhupada said once that death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. Why do we suffer death? Well, the spirit soul doesn't die. He's eternal, born, primeval, not slain. When the body is slain, the soul doesn't die. And yet we seem to be undergoing this process of birth and death. How does that come about? It's an illusion. Whose illusion? Well, it's the soul's illusion. How does the soul get this illusion? The soul gets the illusion because he identifies himself falsely with the material body. How does he acquire this false identification with the material body? A philosophical mistake? No. Not just a philosophical mistake. He's trying to enjoy the body. Because he tries to enjoy the body, then he identifies with the body. That's the thing. As soon as one thinks, now I am going to enjoy the senses and enjoy this material world, then the soul becomes bewildered and he identifies himself with the material body. That's why we have, our process has two parts. It's called vijnana and vijnana. By jnana we correct the philosophical mistake. We can understand, I am not this body. Because of course there are philosophers everywhere, or scientists they even call themselves, who are promulgating the idea, you know, some kind of materialistic monism. There's only matter. And then there's consciousness is some kind of fizz, you know, that effervescence of matter, somehow or other. But actually there's only matter. So we can understand philosophically. Krishna says there's two kinds of energy. There's the material energy, and there's the conscious energy, the jiva souls. So the jivas are fundamental units of existence, the conscious particle. Consciousness is irreducible to any other state or condition. So there's two things. There's matter and consciousness. And the whole world has arisen because of the confluence of these material and spiritual energies. And Krishna says, and both of these have their source in me, and beyond me there is nothing further. Is the absolute truth. There is no truth higher than me. So that he explains, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, now I'm going to tell you everything that there is to know, both phenomenal and noumenal. And he explains, there's the material energy, earth, air, fire, water, ether. What Bhaktisiddhanta says, solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy, and space. And also ones that are not even recognized by modern material scientists, even though they're material scientists, they don't even know all of matter. But mind, intelligence, false ego, manas, buddhi, ahankara. Right there in one verse, Krishna's gone beyond modern science. So there he says, that's everything material. Then, noumenal, he describes the other energy of his, the jiva, souls, parapakriti, who are trying to, who are in this material world. And everything in this world comes from these two energies. And these two energies both come from him. And beyond me, there's nothing else. So that's it. That's the total inventory of existence. Huh? There's matter, and there's spirit, and there's the controller and source of both, the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. He explains that very nicely to us in this way. So that's jnana. We know we are not these bodies. We are separate from this material energy. But even if we accept this philosophy intellectually, what does that do for us? Still, you may say, okay, I'm not this body, aham brahmasmi. But still, one is suffering in the material world, worried about the stock market, afraid of death, afraid of unemployment, so many things. He's not prasanatma. This is one who has realized Brahman. Na sochati, na kankshati. He neither hankers nor laments. If I just say I'm not my body, do I stop hankering? Do I stop lamenting? No, it's still going on. That's because one can say I'm not this body, but as long as one is engaged in trying to find pleasure in this material world through the senses, he'll have no realization, no vijnana. So therefore, second part is practice to withdraw our devotion to this material world and to the satisfaction of our senses, and reconstruct our devotional service to Krishna. To engage our senses in the service of Sri Krishna, the transcendental master of the senses, and by so doing have all our projects in the material world abandoned. Because actually we have no future in the material world. None of us do. Our material future is very bad. There's the end, it's called death. The death rate is 100%. There's no future for anybody in the material world. That's what Krishna is telling us. There's no future. Nothing you want anyway. Just birth and death, old age and disease. Get out. So how do we do that? That we have to practice. Must be practice, abhyasa, practice of devotional service. Then we'll not only understand that we're not this body, but by acting on the spiritual platform, we will actually achieve spiritual consciousness and will not be any more harassed by the illusory presentations of this material world. And that's what Krishna said. One becomes prasanatma, fully joyful. Neither hankers nor laments. Sees all living beings as the same. This is consciousness of one. So this was Prahlad Maharaj's desire. He was not interested in material things. So when Nrisingadeva offers him all benedictions, he says, look, I'm already at risk. I was born in a demonic family. My father was a rich person too. His father was Hiranyakashipu. I had everything I wanted. All these temptations are around me. So my position is already precarious. So now, why are you offering me material benedictions? He says, I'm afraid to accept any material benedictions from you. Even though God himself is offering, he says, I'm afraid of them. All I want is to be free from materialistic life. And for that reason, I have taken shelter at your feet. For that, not for any of these other things. That, of course, Nrsingadev knew very well Prahlad Maharaj would not accept any material benedictions. But still, he wanted to hear what he had to say. Here we have so if Krishna offers us any material benediction, we should refuse. Actually, in general, Krishna does not offer these to his devotees if they'll cause the devotee any problem. He is trying to work for the welfare of his devotees. So as long as the devotee might become attached to material life, he won't offer them things. That's why people worship Durga or Ganesh, because they'll offer material benedictions, even though it will harm the devotee, Lord Shiva also. That's why Ravana is a devotee of Lord Shiva. He will grant his devotees material benedictions that are actually harmful to them. But Krishna won't do that. So therefore, people stay away from Krishna sometimes. Because he's too kind, and they don't want that kindness. Any questions and comments? Yes.
The soul can't be touched by any material problem, fire, rain, and so forth.
Yeah.
But it can suffer by identification. It's suffering by identification with the material body.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's touched by suffering in that sense.
It depends on what you mean. You know, it's like if I'm suffering from a bad dream, I'm suffering. So in one sense, I'm not suffering because I'm safe in bed and there's no thing on. But because I've identified with the person in the dream, because of that, I take on this suffering. That we have to say. The false consciousness is there. Contaminated consciousness is there. So the consciousness has to become uncontaminated. Actually, the soul is not suffering. But I'm in the illusion of suffering. So does he really suffer? No. But still the illusion is there.
It's earlier in the verse that you were speaking, in the Bhagavad Gita, you mentioned suffering and also, did you say anything about attachment and suffering? Because I just couldn't hear the English so much, but it says dukkha.
Yeah, dukkha means suffering.
Right.
What Krishna says is that the cause of all suffering, the source of all suffering, is sense gratification. Madison Avenue hasn't received this word yet. Everyone seems to think that as soon as you gratify your senses, you become happy. Why is that? When Krishna says it's the source of all suffering. Prabhupada gives this example. He tells a story. Apparently a political trick at one time in India, this Vishaya Kanya, you know about this? This poisonous maiden, that a king would take a young girl. This is a heavy practice, but anyway, he would take a young girl, just, you know, little girl, baby, and start to feed her a little bit of poison in her food. And just a little bit, And then, you know, maybe she'd get a little sick, and then she'd get used to it. Then add a little more. And a little more. So finally, by the time she reached adolescence, 14 or so, you know, she was eating every day massive doses of poison. You know. Meanwhile, she'd be trained in all the arts of making herself beautiful and seductive and everything like that. Then when she was all trained up and lethal, you know, every skin pore was oozing poison, he'd send her to a political enemy to enjoy it. He'd embrace her. So, Prabhupada tells about that. And the point is, very, very attractive, very beautiful, but deadly. So all things that are enjoyable in this world, they're like this Vishayakanya. They look beautiful and wonderful and ecstatic, but you embrace to enjoy, you die. Watch out. Kishan. Yes. Money? Yeah, yeah, that's right. But of course, you can, when you're in illusion, you don't see the spirit. That's the problem. The illusion is, there is no spirit, everything is matter. So in that sense, you become as though separated.
What?
It's as if you were separated from Krishna. A person who's in illusion, they think the world arose from chance. They think there is no God. When a devotee sees the sunlight, he says, oh, there's Krishna's sunlight. There's Krishna coming through that sunlight. Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and the moon. Prabhupada once said to somebody, they asked him, have you seen God? He said, oh, you've seen too. Have you seen the sun? Have you seen the moon? They may have seen, but they didn't recognize. That's an illusion. They thought, oh, here's the old sun, here's the old moon, these are just, you know, like a hot stone or a cold stone or whatever, you know, they don't see Krishna. But the devotee says, here's Krishna's sun, here's Krishna's moon. They're moving under his control.
But the sun is not Krishna.
Well, the sun is Krishna's energy.
Connection with Krishna.
Well, Krishna's there, Surya Narayan, there's Narayan's in the sun. And he says, whatever you see in this world that is wonderful or splendid, that is my representation. No, they don't know that themselves are spirit. They actually try to kill the spirit. What do people do when they take drugs that make them less conscious? They're trying to kill the spirit. Keisha?
The question of demigod, you know, you see that many Indians, they are like sentimentally attached to the demigods.
Mm-hmm.
Philosophically, we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God.
Mm-hmm.
As far as preaching is concerned, like, I was talking to one Indian, he goes to a temple in Philadelphia somewhere, they have all the, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, demigods and Krishna and
mm-hmm.
everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have faith in some demigod, you can worship that demigod, and
mm-hmm.
that's how they go to that temple.
Mm-hmm.
So just my question is, like, for preaching, you know, like, should we do something, you know, to get these people to a temple so that we can actually expand?
Do what? Install devatas, you mean?
That's not the way to share a problem. That's what you would say.
Yeah, I don't think that Prabhupada ever did that. Sometimes some feature will have some picture. You know, like they did that Garba dance. in that high school gymnasium. So they had all these pictures of, as Hashmukh Patel put it, our cosmic mother. But then over that they had, you know, a picture of Radha Sharabihan. So that's okay, you know. And people understand. It's not that we're against the devatas. You know, they can be worse than the devatas if they've been worshipped by devotees, but they worship them for Krishna consciousness. And the gopis worship Katyayani. Please give me Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, as my husband. You know? They were asking for Krishna as their husband. So, you know. In Nectar Devotion, it says that Ganesh can be worshipped for the removal of obstacles in devotional service. So I remember writing to Prabhupada, early 70s, we said, okay, we want to worship Ganesh for removal of obstacles in devotional service. And Prabhupada just said, never mind. He said, you don't have the paraphernalia it takes for worshipping Ganesh. That's what he said. I don't know what he meant. I don't know if you need kusha grass or whatever, but that's what he said. So he never had us do it. So we had to be very careful, you know. Very, very careful not to compromise like this. Oh, glorious to see the problem.